welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, a bi-weekly audio program featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. And joining us on the line is the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Fulp. Mickey, we have Zombie from the Surf Lords playing right now in the background, and that is from their first CD, I understand.
Yeah, it's a new song for our show, but it's an old song for the Surf Lords, and I quite like it.
Okay, good stuff. For this show, Mickey, we are talking aluminum. I can't believe we left this one until near the end of the rundown that we've done of the periodic table, but here we are, atomic number 13 on the periodic table, the most abundant metal in the Earth's crust. Tell us more.
Well, we'll call it aluminum since we're on this side of the pond, but if you're a Brit, you call it aluminium.
Mm-hmm.
We'll try to ignore that. Soft, silvery white, ductile metal, malleable, very low density, and as you said, it's the most abundant metal in the crust, and it's third in the crust, just behind oxygen and silicon. Very reactive, forms 270 minerals, but it rarely occurs as a natural element, but it forms many major rock-forming minerals, including the feldspars and the clays, and most gemstones are actually alumina, emerald, rubies, sapphires, aquamarines, garnets, etc., etc.
First produced, I think, Mickey, in 1825. Tell us a bit about the history, though, that led up to that point.
What was first used by the Greeks and Romans, the aluminum salt called alum, it's an astringent, i.e. it sanitizes, sterilizes wounds, and it's been used, alum has been used ever since. It was predicted to occur by the French chemist we've talked about before, Lavoisier, discovered by Davy, the Englishman, and other chemists we've talked about many times in 1808. First produced as a native metal by a Dane named Oersted in 1825. Even up until the 1880s, it was so difficult to produce. An ounce of aluminum was more valuable than an ounce of gold, if you can imagine.
Wow.
That. By the mid-1880s, there had been a laboratory-scale process, which was then commercialized, called the Hall-Herrott process. I hope I pronounced that right. And it was electrolytic furnaces for extracting metallic aluminum. Most people probably don't know. I didn't know. And the capstone of the Washington Monument was cast aluminum.
I saw that,
3 kilograms in 1884, and that would have been more valuable than gold at the time.
Yeah, and we can't have metallic aluminum, Mickey, without ore bauxite. That's where it comes from, right? That's where it's produced from.
Yeah, and I failed to mention that. Thanks for reminding me. The ore is bauxite. It's aluminum oxide, and it's formed essentially by leaching and weathering in tropical environments and produced by many, many countries in the world. Production is still very complicated. It occurs in two-stage process, starting with the so-called Bayer process. I don't know if that has anything to do with aspirins. I don't think so. But anyway, bauxite is converted to alumina, which is Al2O3, aluminum oxide, plus two times the amount of waste. So last year or something on the order of 85, 90 million tons of waste a year, and that's a significant amount of waste. Then the Hall-Herrott process, which is the conversion of alumina plus cryolite, which is sodium aluminum fluoride, and that results in aluminum metals at about 99% pure. Very energy intensive, so energy intensive that accounts for 30% of the cost of producing a kilogram of aluminum. And 5% of all the electricity used in the U.S. is to smelt aluminum, to smelt and refine aluminum. So, and then finally, there's something called the HOOPS process, when it needs to be very, very pure at 99.99%.
Yeah. Much of that
because
pure...
it's so energy intensive and the high cost, there have been many other processes and ore sources tried over the years, including feldspar-rich rocks and clays and various other things. All these have been tried so far without success.
Right, and much of that super pure aluminum, Mickey, that you spoke of, that 99.99%, a lot of that's used in electronics and wires and cables. But I think for most people, they associate aluminum with its weight. It's you know, it's not very dense, it's light, and it's corrosion resistance, and that leads into a lot of different uses all over the world.
Well, it is, and it's the second most widely used metal in the world. About 58 million tons produced last year. Compare that with something like copper, which is 22 million tons. So we see how much it's used. And bear in mind, this has all come about in the last, 110, 120 years.
Mm-hmm.
So before that, the industrial world existed without aluminum, so you see how important it's become. It's generally alloyed with another metal, copper, zinc, magnesium, manganese, silica, somewhere in the order of 1-8% of those metals with aluminum.
Mm-hmm.
And then the specialty metals, zirconium, hafnium, scandium, which we haven't talked about, we'll get to it in another show or two.
Mm-hmm.
So these specialty metals can add tremendous strength to it. About 90% of it's used as metallic aluminum, but also the compounds are very important too, including the aforementioned aluminum and aluminum oxide, about 10% of the use, used as a desk, used in petroleum catalysts, various other uses, platinum for catalytic converters are sprayed over an aluminum oxide
mm-hmm.
support or substrate. Very hard, i.e. all the gemstones, some of the hardest minerals on Earth, so it has a lot of uses as abrasives. Then alum, aluminum sulfate, used in water treatment, manufacture of paper, fire extinguishers, food additives, tanning leather, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Aluminum chloride, used as antiperspirant, so every morning you put your deodorant on after your shower, you're putting a bunch of aluminum chloride on your body. So, yeah, there are lots and lots of uses. The problem with aluminum alloys, they've got lots of applications, but they're very subject to fatigue,
mm-hmm.
so... there's an obsolescence or a fixed life involved as opposed to, for instance, iron steel-based structures.
Right. They also have a low melting point, right? They're sensitive to heat.
Yep, and mm-hmm. yes, and that was my next thing,
okay.
Very sensitive to heat. So I want to get back to its uses as aluminum metal and alloys, transportation industry, cars and trains and
mm-hmm.
trucks and airplanes, especially ships, used in packaging. Beer I'm having right now came out of a can poured into a glass.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, construction industry, windows, door frames, etc. Household items, most people have some sort of cookware, utensils, or aluminum foil in their kitchen. Big light poles, those silvery things you see. Likely your computer casing is made from aluminum, your phone casing, baseball bats. One of the major uses now is for major electrical transmission lines because of the lightweight and the relatively low cost compared to copper. It is a very good electrical and thermal conductor, but not nearly as so as copper, but much lighter and much cheaper. CDs,
yep.
Consumer electronics,
mm-hmm.
Powdered aluminum.
Oh, I didn't know.
Used in model rocket fuels or any solid rocket fuels. And if you were a kid with a chemistry set when I was in high school, we would we would get our powdered aluminum. You could actually order it in those days from Fisher Scientific and combine it with a little bit of potassium permanganate and put a fuse on it, and you've got a cherry bomb.
Oh, yeah. You were a holy terror, I think, in science class there, Mickey, in the back of the room with the chemistry set, weren't you?
Well, you know, this was all done outside of the chemistry lab, okay. I can guarantee you. But, for the day, we made some pretty big packages of bombs that blew up various things out in the country in the Ozarks of Missouri.
Okay. What are we talking about here, global production annually? How much of this stuff is produced annually, and are we in a deficit, a surplus situation right now?
Well, there's a lot of aluminum around right now, so the prices dipped in 2015 from $1.06 at the beginning of the year to 80 cents at the end of the year, lowest prices since 2009 with the commodities corrections and crashes. That's no surprise. U.S., we have three companies with eight smelters. We didn't mention, but scrap is a very important part of the market. Approximately 30% of world consumption is recycled or new scrap, all the way from recycling your tin cans to whatever. A lot of it's recycled. A lot of that has to do with the fact it's so expensive, but it doesn't corrode, so it doesn't really go away. World smelter production last year, estimated at 58 million tons. Mm-hmm. I already mentioned that. China, by far the largest producer at 32 million tons, and it goes way down from there. Russia would be next at about 3.5, U.S. at 1.6. Mm-hmm. But that's aluminum production. But you've also got to look at the bauxite production, which is what's mined.
Right.
Somewhere on the order of 250 to 300 million tons a year. So this is major, major mining. Largest producer, Australia, then China, Brazil, Guinea, India, Kazakhstan, several others, Jamaica. Mm-hmm. The U.S. gets most of its aluminum, or bauxite, let me say, bauxite from Jamaica, and many others, but really requires tropical environments. And so the U.S. essentially has no reserves or resources of bauxite, but we do have some of the biggest aluminum smelters in the world, as does Canada.
Right,
65% of the imports from the U.S. or into the U.S. come straight from Canada, especially there along the St. Lawrence Seaway. So,
right. Is this a story to invest in? I know you had mentioned Alcoa earlier.
Well, it's been attempted in the junior resource sector unsuccessfully with... I actually got involved with a bauxite play in the country of Guinea probably 7-8 years ago. That did not end up well because basically the Guinea government nationalized the business. So, and then there was a company based in Montreal one of these new processes to use aluminum bearing clays, and to my knowledge, that company failed in that endeavor and has since gone on to something else. So there's been juniors try, but no one's been successful to my knowledge.
Okay, well, the Surf Lords are warming up, Mickey, so let's wrap it up there. I think next time we get together, we may very well be sitting across the table from each other at a Toronto watering hole. We've got the Prospectors and Developers Association conference coming up, the big PDAC.
Yep, and we'll try to record a couple of shows in person while I'm there. So I look forward to seeing you next week, Rob.
Okay, well, let's hope the mood at the convention is not too dour, because it's been a rough time, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, gold's up, so there's perhaps light at the end of the horizon.
Okay, good stuff. We'll talk to you soon, Mickey. Thanks very much.
All right. Thanks, Rob.
That's Mickey Fulp, the Mercenary Geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com. And you can always hear Mickey's latest opinion exclusively on mercenarygeologist.fm and kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.